Arvin Mivas. Matthew Ravel.
Stuart Langridge.
No!
Should we start again?
Mavis Beaton.
He teaches typing.
Okay.
So what have we got on the show?
And I'm James Hilchin.
Press the space bar.
Season 4,
episode 1, Love Radio.
Nice. We're back.
She's a mushroom.
Summer is over and we're back.
Season 4, episode 1. This is Love Radio. We've been going for nearly 3 years now.
And I made Bradshaw.
Have we?
Matthew Ravel.
Is it really that long?
Yep.
Yes, it is. John O'Bacon.
And I'm Stuart Langridge. Yeah, welcome to Love Radio Season 4.
I tell you what, I've missed a show. Have you missed a show?
I've missed it, yeah.
It's good to be back in the old saddle, as they say.
It is
good to be back. And, of course, this is the first show since the mighty Love Radio Live 2006.
Thank you, everyone, for coming along. It was brilliant.
Hope you had a good time.
Yep. Unless you didn't come.
This is really cheesy, but we had a great time. Sorry.
Starting
the season off talking over each other.
Let's get things off to a start.
Doesn't mean to go on, blah.
So,
what are we talking about?
The difference was that was me talking over Ack, which normally is the other way around.
Oh, we normally can't hear you talking over Ack.
Shut up.
God, right, people anyway, yes,
what do you want to talk about this evening?
I know what I'd like to talk about.
What shall we
your
talk
about?
Your haircut.
Haircut. Have anyone seen Abe Simpson?
God, quite like my haircut.
I'm sure
you're going to start singing in Black Grape.
Anyway, what have we got coming up on the wonderful show?
Coconut. We're going to talk about how we would spend the Google Summer of Code money if we had it.
Yeah, we're going to do a couple of interviews.
Yeah, we're going to talk to some interviews.
Talk to a guy from Campware.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, we're going to keep going with the interviews. We think they're good.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're also going to interview sheep eating
Stephen something. I can't remember your name. Sheep eating Taz.
Sheep eating Taz.
And
he's from Hull Lug. And he's going to tell us what they're doing up in Hull Lug.
We're going to talk about new careers.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Korea. And, being involved in Ubuntu. So, you know.
Yep.
So we've got an interesting show, and we've got some emails at the end, of course. And
of course.
As ever, start of season, so send in your ideas. We want to hear
them. In.
Yep.
show@lugradio.org for those of you who haven't listened to the show before.
And not just famous people, we want regular people as well.
Yeah, because all those famous people that write to us are pissing us off.
Did you not get the memo from Michelle Pfeiffer?
Oh, look, Dudley Moore's written in. He's using Ubuntu.
That would be hard.
We also had a guy write in who used to run a Nigerian bank, and he was a prince, apparently. So, we must be doing something, right?
Okay.
Let's get on.
Let's go on with the show.
Do you guys see the Linspire controversy?
No.
I
thought you were going to say, did you see the Linspire, the fact that they've made the click and run for it?
Which is cool.
Click and run open source, which is actually pretty cool.
You saw that, yeah.
That's a great charge.
That's cool. I mean, that was surprising. You know, the fact that I thought that was their main revenue.
I can say, isn't that their business model?
Well, you see, Mr. Carmody said...
Mr. Carmody, is it?
They have two levels.
Monsieur Carmody, my friend and comrade.
You're on the leadership board, aren't you two?
I am.
Now. Oh, okay.
Right. Jono, Ubuntu Community Manager Bacon, not on the Linspire leadership board.
Yeah, I thought there'd be a conflict of interest, so I
Shut up, I'm talking.
What? Matthew, were you interested?
Matthew P.
Sorry, carry on.
So anyway, so he goes...
You started a sentence, so...
Yeah, but you're allowed to sometimes. It wasn't in the American way.
Okay.
Anyway, right? The thing is, there are two levels of subscription. One is gold membership, which gets you commercial software.
Yes.
And the other is standard.
It gets you commercial software for a reduced price. You still have to pay for the commercial software.
Right. Do you want to tell this story?
No, sorry, go on. I was only going to chip in for all the bits where you were wrong. Carry on.
Now, basically, they're getting...
Bootinthespuds.com. Carry on.
They get enough cash through the gold and OEM stuff.
So what's the other standard called? Second Class Citizen?
And that's free now.
Right.
And that's basically just like having an app to get, which obviously...
Wicked. But you can get packages.
What do you mean? Packages?
Doesn't Click and Run give you special software?
No, it's just all...
It's just a very nice interface to apps, basically.
Oh, right.
It's a really nice interface.
There is quite a lot of stuff in there which isn't available from, say, Debian repositories, but that's just because the Linspire people happen to have packaged it up as dev.
But couldn't you just install it then?
Anyway.
Yes, you could do, yeah. But,
right, okay.
But apps and Synaptic are both crappy interfaces really nice. By comparison with Click and Run.
I wasn't referring
you
to
weren't
that,
even talking about
that specific thing. But that's brilliant, and I think we all like that. I was referring to the controversy that sprung up.
Ooh, we're like a bit of controversy.
Ooh.
What's controversial?
Yeah, well, I stumbled across this the other day. It was on some news site that apparently there's been a bit of a... there's an accusation that FreeSpire have
an accusation.
Choose your words carefully. You've got four here.
There's an accusation that Linspire have rigged the distro watch results.
How can you do that?
And the way the news story was talking about it was that apparently the default page when you load up the web browser goes to the DistroWatch page instead of...
no way.
Yes.
Does DistroWatch count visitors to know who's most popular?
Yeah, which is why it's so shit.
Well, they've got some kind of... No, DistroWatch have got some kind of clever way of filtering out certain things, I believe. I don't know a lot about it.
Because they filter out every Linspire user hammering the site every
day. They still crown the champion of distros by how many visits the web page gets, which is a bit...
So has it shut them up? Has it shut
them anyway, up? there was that, ranks. and then there was it was revealed that apparently there was some other links that were going off to the DistroWatch page, such as the EnView, something on the EnView site, I think the information or the download link or something
on the EnView site.
Yes, and right. Then there was also some guy who apparently is a bit of an arsehole on the Linspire forums or the FreeSpire forums was saying that there's some link to from the FreeSpire site was going there as well. These have all been changed back. Right.
Okay.
And this big thing exploded over this controversy.
We should talk to him.
And it's I dropped Kevin an email and said, I said, what the hell's going on?
I mean, if it's true, that's a pretty sleazy marketing technique.
It is.
I was going to say that's not marketing at this point.
No, I mean, obviously, is one aspect of
it. It's just an underhand way of doing. I've got to be clear, right? I contacted Kevin Carmody and I said, you know, what's going on? What is this all about? And he says that genuinely there was a mistake that was made within their systems.
They slipped and accidentally took
the distro watch back
and then burnt it to the disc.
I'm not 100% convinced I believe that, to be honest with you.
He said that there's some kind of, I think he called it Express Earls or something. But there was some mistake was made. And
it wasn't him. Big boys did
and
it.
Is that what he said? And it went to the
two dude defence. Some other dude did it.
Now, obviously, people are going to listen to this and think, "Well, yeah, Carmody."
My enormous chin.
Carmody's people are going to respond either, "Oh, that's very true," or "That's beard." Right? And if you think it's beard, that's
press your
it
red
is
button
and not
now.
A very.
We need a press your red button now thing. That'd be wicked. Sorry, carry on.
If it is beard, then it is very underhand. If it was an accident, then it's just,
But how can it be an accident?
What are you talking about? To be honest, if they've got friendly URLs or something, they might have, a directory on their server or something that lots of different friendly URLs point to, and that directory might have then forwarded on to this other thing accidentally. I suppose it's possible. Or someone might have experimented.
Not beyond the realm of possibility, I guess.
I suppose it is possible. I mean, just think of it from a technical level.
Did it shoot Hanks, by the way?
For it to happen on a number of different websites is...
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I can understand how...
Different websites.
If it was put in the just as the default homepage for the browser, you might think, okay, there's... either yes, that sounds like it could have been a mistake, or yes, there's plausible deniability there, depending on whether you believe Mr. Carmody or not. But the fact that it happened there and on the EnView site at the same time, a simultaneous accident, a simultaneous identical accident.
The thing is, I reckon it.
Has Mr. Carmody hired a crack hacker to break in and debase the websites?
No, he's hired a crack smoker.
We've got to stress as well that the some guy from the DistroWatch team went onto the FreeSpire forums and said,
you're all cocks!
And outlined some of the situation, and I didn't read the post, but apparently he said that a number of other distros have cooked the books as well, so it's not totally
uncommon. I was going to say, it wouldn't surprise me.
But the thing that I said to Kevin is that I can understand, that fanatics of distros are going to probably want to ramp up the results, yeah? But when it appears on an official site, that's when I think people start getting a bit suspicious.
Yeah, but the Linspire guys aren't stupid. They understand the importance of public image. And, I mean, they're fairly good at presenting an image and sort of dictating what's said... Not dictating, but sort of, leading what's said about them.
Yeah.
They're not... going to do something like this on purpose, surely it's stupid.
Well,
unless it was some like.
Well, equally, they're not going to do it by mistake, are they?
You see, it's interesting. Why not? I suspect that a lot of people would say that's the kind of thing Linspire would do.
Yeah, but there wouldn't.
But on the other hand, from speaking to Kevin, yeah. It isn't the kind of thing that they do.
They're much more savvy than that.
When you made them aware of it, did they immediately change it?
When who? I didn't.
Well, when they were made aware.
Apparently, they like resolved it in pretty much immediately.
Right. Okay. Fair play.
And if it is a mistake, I mean, I don't know. And Kevin's outlined the situation very clearly on the forums and to me and whatnot. And you know, it could be a perfectly genuine mistake. But it's just an interesting story.
I'm happy to believe them. I think the main problem is the way that people put too much faith in what DistroWatch says, because it is just a popularity contest, really.
To be honest, it's not just that, it's the fact that people put too much faith in the DistroWatch ratings thing.
That's what I mean.
DistroWatch as a site has got loads of other stuff.
DistroWatch is a useful resource, but sorry, the ratings is what I meant.
People only ever care about the ratings thing. So,
well, that's a bit of a shame, because it's kind of tarnished their click and run thing.
It is, because that was a real big splash.
That's really quite impressive. I think they'd always talked about, you know, people said, why don't you open source, click and run, you miserable bastards? And they were like, well, you know, we would like to, but it's part of our revenue stream. Now it's not part of their revenue stream, and they've done exactly what it says on the tin.
It's part of their revenue stream, and they've been able to open it up, so that's a good thing. I mean, you know, if we're going to talk about distros fucking things up, there are other people we could talk about.
Yes.
There's lots of different distros that fuck things up, so.
I mean, you could count them on your hand, YZ.
Yeah.
Are you hinting at something, Matthew P?
No, my point is that it just sounds like we're having a bit of a go at Linspire, and Ubuntu did a major fuck up recently.
I don't think we're having a go
at
them. I think we're just talking about the story.
Ubuntu did what?
Fucked up majorly on Next.org.
Oh, yeah.
Which has been discussed ad infinitum, and, you know, everyone's very contrite.
But interestingly, with both of these situations, right, you've got Kevin Carmody's responded with the Linspire thing, and you've got Mark Shuttleworth responding with the Ubuntu thing.
Yep.
And both have been completely transparent about it, which is brilliant.
Yeah, that's what
we want. You don't get this with proprietary software. And I think that too many people are saying, you know, look, Linspire screwed up, or look, Ubuntu screwed up. But they don't say, well, look, these guys at the top are actually digging in and explaining the scenario. The
important thing. Bear in mind that it's a bit different saying Mark Shuttleworth or Kevin Carmody stands up as opposed to expecting Steve Ballmer or Larry Ellison to do it, because Mark Shuttleworth is kind of two layers of management away from the bottom, and Larry Ellison's about 200 layers of management away from the bottom.
Yeah, but there's still a figurehead.
I mean, there's a reason why you could say it's their responsibility, stand up and do it.
Mm. I mean, what I think what's important about this is not what's happened, but the fact
how we
like
move
say,
forward.
The way, shut up. The way that the two different distros have handled.
Calm down, John.
The way that I've too busy ripped my shorts.
Are you wearing two pairs of shorts?
Yes. Carry on, Matt.
Is it because you can't afford pants? Anyway, the important thing is the way that the two distros have handled it, and they've both handled it reasonably well, it seems.
No, I think they have.
Cool.
Yes, I think they have.
I think they have too.
No, I do as well.
Is this a game?
It could be.
Oh, yeah, they have.
Really have.
Have they?
Mm.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right, we're talking to Sava Tatic. Did I get that right?
Yep, you did.
Super.
Hello.
From Campware.
Dobry den. Yep.
Tell us about Campware. Is it a homosexual's clothing store, or is it something different?
It's funny thing, only Brits think of that.
Yeah. Fancy that. It's because we're all homophobes.
It started out as a Center for Advanced Media Prague. That's the organization,
Center
the brand
CAM.
Of an organization called the Media Development Loan Fund, which is dedicated to helping independent media worldwide, which I suppose you know what that means. And CAMP was just the acronym that came, predates me.
I see.
Okay, so maybe we'll sell the URL someday to some site of that you're mentioning. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Right. Cool. So, basically, as I understand it, what you guys do. Sorry, my name's Matthew. Hello. You produce software for media outlets in developing countries. Is that right?
Sure. We actually produce. Yeah, that's our primary target audience for our software. But I mean, anybody, of course, who's smart would use it.
Okay.
We don't try to make stuff like, you know, like something that may do for like little guys and so on. Our ambitions are pretty, I mean, our budgets are not that huge, but our ambitions are pretty high. We want to ultimately make the best software out there, at least best open source, which normally tends to be the best software around for media organizations. So what's different about us is that we make software that's especially targeted toward media organizations rather than, I don't know, we have a CMS called Campsite. There are about, I don't know, how many, 600 CMSs at the moment, open source or more?
Yeah.
But we're one of the few that specializes in like the journalist's experience, sort of like something that would be easy to use by your common journalist who's sometimes at war with his mouse, you know?
Yeah, I noticed that you emphasize the fact that you make it easy for editors and journalists to use Campsite. And I take it that, for example, you've got another bit of software which automates the running of radio stations.
Yeah.
I take it, do you kind of get out there and meet the end user, which is, to be fair, something that doesn't happen a lot of the time in open source projects?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in essence, it's you can say that it's user-driven development because essentially, the way it started out, we were doing some implementation as CAMP, this branch for new media assistance for independent media.
Right.
We went out to do a couple of projects. We started a radio network in Indonesia called 68H,
cool.
which has grown out to include more than 350 stations. My colleagues went out there and they used just standard FTP and email attachments and standard MP3 encoders, nothing fancy.
Right, yeah.
And you know, like, going around and we saw, like, we first set out to see what's available there, both commercial, not very expensive, and free. And then if, you know, nothing was there, we essentially made it. We started making it. It was a gradual process, so we all, you know, we. I hope you cut this part.
No, we're with you.
Yeah, interesting.
So essentially, it is going around newsrooms in these weird places. Some less weird, some more weird, and more bare bones. Some fairly demanding, but you know, in terms of complexity, and we come back and sort of. You know, summarize these experiences, and we try to look for similar projects all the time. So we do one piece of software and say, okay, we're not going to tailor make it for this particular outlet.
We're
just going to generalize it a bit. And so it goes on, you know, just keep adding. It's a sort of like a, how would you say, a guided sort of development of like, or channeling the efforts of all these. Ideas that come out of these little newsrooms throughout the world.
Cool.
And you know, expanding the software base that we have.
Yeah.
Okay. So, to what extent then is it important that you're licensing this with free software licenses and using the open source model?
Well, it's important for several ways. First, as you all know, I mean, open source is good for you.
Yeah.
Yes,
absolutely.
Karma.
So, makes you grow big and healthy.
We are, it's right in many ways. I mean, the particular thing is that we were actually, when we developed the first piece of software, Campsite, back started in 99, 2000, we were thinking what to do with it. Yeah, we just wanted to have something that we could use in our projects. We're not even thinking about releasing it. But then we figured out, why not, you know, release it?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
As open source.
Yeah.
And, keep maintaining it, and that's how we started dabbling with it.
Yeah,
good.
And we loved it ever since. I mean, it's good for the developers too, like the programmers, because they feel that they contribute to something that they can, if they somehow get disenchanted or whatever, or we get disenchanted with them, which doesn't happen very often.
Well, it's funny. We I had an email about I think it's about a month or two ago. Someone from your neck of the woods sent me an email about live support.
Right.
Because I'm
they're on live support.
Live support.
Oh right.
Not live support. And.
Yeah. Well, soon to be renamed, okay?
Oh, really? What's it going to be called?
I don't know where we've been. We couldn't find a good name.
Just anything better.
because it's like, it was the idea of the guy who conceived the whole concept, Mitch Flohr. I mean, he's one of our, he's a Berlin-based guy. He's has been crucial in many things. And, you know, he was the author of the idea, so he had the, you know.
Right.
Essentially, but it then turns out there's a bit of, like, a dozen of like, online sales support things called live support.
Yeah, well, it's funny, because, like I said, I got an email about it, because, you know, a couple of us work on Jocosha, and that's GStreamer-based,
yeah.
And live support uses GStreamer, and I'm always interested in opportunities to pimp GStreamer, so why did you, what was your choice in open source software for your products? I mean, GStreamer is obviously one of them, but are there any particular technologies that you found particularly useful for you?
Well, sure. Sure, we've been using like the, you know, the basics like MySQL, PostgreSQL, Apache, of course. I mean, Tomcat,
right.
All sorts of things. I mean, we've been using like ready-made packages like PHP Ads New, and we're about to use this piece of software for radio archiving.
Dark log
from University of Warwick. Okay. And so on. I mean, anything that's out there, I mean, you know, but, hey, you know, open source software is so powerful these days. I mean, you have to be really nuts not to use it.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
If you're smart, you know, not everybody is smart.
Which so, obviously you go, your software goes to, sorry, I'm having difficulty getting my words out here. Your software obviously goes out to various different parts of the world and that. To what extent is it an ambassador for free software?
Sorry, I can't hear.
Sorry, to what extent is your software promoting the open source way of life?
Of life, yeah.
To these other to these countries that you take it to? Are you almost like an advert for free software?
Yeah, we are, actually. I personally sort of made that point at one of our annual discussions. We have annual gatherings here in Prague. I mean, they're very informal and rowdy and whatever. And I said, okay, let's, you know, people were saying, should we port live support to Windows? Okay. And that was one thing. And I said, well, you know, only if somebody comes with like $1 million and wants us to do it, because, I mean, why not make something unique to really pull people towards, Linux as a platform, you know, as a professional platform. And I see that, you know, wherever we go, we try to promote. I mean, first thing we do is, like, we put Firefox browsers on everybody's computers. And you'd be surprised. I mean, I don't know, maybe you wouldn't be, but I just came back from Peru where I every computer I turned on seemed to have the exploiter on it. I mean, and no Firefox, no nothing. I mean, so, I, for the first time, used the portable apps, you know, Firefox, portable Firefox, because I can't bear to.
Oh, on the USB keyring thing. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, exactly. It works really well in game too. I mean, it's quite good. So I didn't have to use that stuff, and it's safer and so on. But in general, I mean, people don't really know, and we have introduced a number of open source concepts to these people. I mean, for the first time, sometimes, you know, like we go to one newsroom. There's one place in Montenegro, in a beautiful town of Kotor. We said to them, oh, okay, you have all these things, your small radio stations. Well, you know, you could turn all of this into open source, I mean, software, one or the other. And they say, yeah, sure, but nobody's looking for licenses here, you know. It's, it's, you know. And then 2 years later, the guy comes, hey, where do you download that thing that you call Linux? They're coming after us. And that's one thing I actually missed, which is very important, why we use open source as well, is because since we work with media that exist and operate in difficult conditions, you know, we want to eliminate all the possibility, or actually to limit the possibility of a government to exert pressure on them. I mean, normally you don't have like outright dictatorships these days where they shoot you. I mean, there are a couple of those, like North Korea and so on. But, you know, like normally it's more subtle. They choke you in one way or the other. And the moment they figure out that, hey, I mean, I bet these guys are using illegal Microsoft Office. You know,
exactly.
Inspectors there.
Free software for freedom, just like Stallman's always said.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's no kidding. I mean, it's like it's legal, you know, and it's good. And the thing is, you're not locked in into some proprietary standards. That last one takes a while to trickle down. But essentially, I mean, this thing about legality, and it's mostly like in countries that have emerged out of dictatorships like Serbia or Montenegro and so on, that, you know, these Microsoft and all these other business software alliances coming after those people, and they essentially start hitting their pockets. I mean, now, you know, after the dictatorship is gone, another challenge is to survive, you know, the onslaught of commercial media and so on. So in order to preserve those independent voices and so on, you have to make money to survive. And one of the things is it's also cost cutting with open source. I mean, yeah.
Cool.
Absolutely. No, it's brilliant. I think you guys are doing I think you guys are doing a fantastic job.
Yep.
Preserving freedom all over the world through free software, which is fantastic. Thanks very much for coming on the show and telling us about it.
Yeah, thanks.
Yes, thank you. Yes.
Cheers, man.
And it was lovely to speak to
you. Yeah, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, can I just use a little promo thing? I mean,
sure. Yeah.
You've got 5 seconds.
Five seconds. Okay, listen. I mean, we're just about to launch a good karma guaranteed and maybe money too program for developers, and it's going to be announced on our site very soon. But the idea is this: I mean, since we're small and we depend on donations and so on, we can't pay programmers to learn the software and contribute to our code and so on. But, I mean, if people want to contribute and they prove to be good and you know, gel with our core developers, then, you know, there are always projects coming our way and, you know, the money could be coming down the tubes as well. I mean, down
Excellent.
The line.
And people should go to where? Campware.org for that.
Campware.org, yeah.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Okay, developers, go to campware.org/get-involved.
Everybody. Okay, thank you very
Same
much.
Store, thanks. Take it easy.
Thanks so much indeed, Sava.
Thanks, bye.
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 People have banged on about us banging on about Ubuntu.
guess what we're going to do?
for some considerable time now. But
it's worked, though, hasn't it?
But 50% of the Lug Radio team are now kind of officially part of the Ubuntu community. Matt's an official part of the Ubuntu marketing team and so on, and for the last person in the world who hasn't heard that Jono's now
Ubuntu community manager. Ah, no, I'm not.
So, chaps, tell us about it.
Matthew P.
All right, well, just before Lug Radio, I started...
The Radio Live, do you mean?
I was a woman.
Lug Radio Live, that's the one. You're right, Lug Radio Live. I started looking around for some other things to do during the summer break. And
after you'd wallpapered the house.
Yeah,
And, well, written the Jocosha documentation.
Well, no, that just got done before I even had a chance to install
it. To be fair, it did.
Anyway.
Kudos to Jeff.
Yeah, well done. So I started having a look around at what was available in the Ubuntu world. And we'd spoken to Matt East from the doc team, and it looked like the doc team was doing fairly well. Now, I'm not saying they don't need
help. That's not a team of doctors, right?
No, unfortunately not.
It's a team of big places where ships go.
So, obviously they still need people to join up with them. But I noticed that there was a glimmering of a marketing team within Ubuntu. And for some reason, that caught my eye. And
what could it be? You've never mentioned marketing before.
But it wasn't really going anywhere. Nobody was really doing anything with it, except for one guy who had very strong ideas and wasn't really getting on with anyone else. So I kind of went in there, and there was a couple of other guys who got chatting. Yeah, and we just basically got things going again. Now, the problem is, someone's described it as kind of being a bit like herding cats, which essentially it is, because...
There's a video on YouTube about that.
Is there? Yeah. Right, okay.
Presumably, after anything anybody says, you could just insert there's a video on YouTube about that.
Apart from anything interesting. So the problem you've got is that... there are a lot of non-technical people joining the Ubuntu community now, or let's say non-hackers, and they all want somewhere to go.
Yeah.
And that's obviously a challenge for any larger open source project, particularly one with the profile of Ubuntu, and there's a bloke being employed to deal with that.
I was going to say, you want someone to manage that community. Yeah.
Naturally someone with charisma and good looks.
And I think there's a lot of these people...
don't shun me like that, Rebecca.
But presumably Susie have already got him, so we've got John O'Bacon instead.
And Susie has got something else. The thing is that some of these people gravitate towards the marketing team because everyone knows what marketing is, don't they? No,
shit.
They don't.
Oh, no, right.
So the interesting thing has been kind of getting... getting around the idea of all the different things that marketing is without the natural corporate structures where you can just say to people, do this, do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, you know, obviously something that everyone in the open source community has dealt with already. But within the marketing world, it's just slightly different because, you know, I mean, in a traditional sort of corporate marketing setting, you'd set things like smart objectives, which are, you know...
specific, measurable, something.
Achievable,
something
realistic, and timed or something, yeah. And timed and all that, so, yeah. And you can't really do that so easily. And one of the other problems is that the guys at Canonical are obviously seen as, like, the leaders of the community. But, to be honest with you, once you're actually in the community, Canonical is only but one part of the community.
Definitely.
And Ubuntu is much more than Canonical. But, you know, there's a lot of people who are saying, well, we can't do anything unless Canonical say we can do anything with the marketing org. And, to be honest with you, obviously they have led the communication of Ubuntu up until now. So, you know, you would expect that it would be a lot easier to have them on board, and they are interested, but they're very busy. They don't have a lot of time to kind of get involved. But, that, you know, one of the great things is that we've been able to show that there are some kind of more serious people now interested in marketing Ubuntu, and the Canonical guys have kind of acknowledged that, and they're going to start working with us more, which is great. And the other brilliant thing is we've managed to resurrect The Fridge, which was basically a community news website. Unfortunately, Jeff Waugh didn't really have time to keep it going. So
what is he good for?
Absolutely fuck all.
And obviously now he's left Canonical.
Something like that, the song was, wasn't it?
Not updating The Fridge very often, obviously.
Yeah, and, you know, there have been, you know, some of the growing pains that you might expect. You know, so we had a bit of a Barney on amongst The Fridge editors couple of weeks ago. But, you know, it's all been sorted out. And,
did you all just have a massive street fight? Last one standing wins.
No, someone ran to Mark Shuttleworth and asked him to sort it out.
Oh, I'm going to tell his dad.
Basically, yeah.
Did he make you all have a big hammer fight in the street until it was sorted out?
No, he was very diplomatic.
Did he send you all to your rooms?
he was very diplomatic and just sort of said, you
God
know,
damn it, sort it out.
and then he sewed your name in your PE kit.
But anyway, so that's all sorted out now. And yeah, we've got some great people involved. There's, you know, people like Slade and Matt East who I've mentioned already, and people like that who are people that you've seen elsewhere in the community who are getting on with the marketing effort, which is great. The only problem we got now is herding those cats.
Excellent. No, that's really cool.
So, to you.
Baconio.
Oh, and if you want to get involved, then wiki.ubuntu.com/marketing-team, capital M, capital T.
Is he not case insensitive?
Sadly not.
Ought to be.
But I'm insensitive about the case insensitive.
Fucking mine. Completely case insensitive, insensitive. So, Bacon, try and restrain your loquacity a little bit and tell us about what it's like to be a Ubuntu
restrain
community
what?
Manager.
Your grandiloquence.
Garrulousness.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, it's funny you should talk about herding cats, because that's that's essentially what...
You're milking cats, you are, mate.
That's exactly what your job is.
What, milking cats?
Herding.
Oh, right, I was going to say. Yeah, I mean, my job is to ensure that the Ubuntu community just works well together and hangs together nicely, and the wheels are well oiled. And part of it is looking at the different teams. Like Matt was talking about marketing, and you saying that there's going to be people from Canonical who are going to be helping out with that and getting involved. Well, I'm going to be helping out and getting involved. That's one of the things I want to work on.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Doesn't fucking want
so you can bite me. You're not in the team anymore. But yeah, I mean, things like marketing, and one thing I'm really interested in personally is the loco teams. Which are the local community teams. It's got nothing to do with the Kylie Minogue song. And these teams kind of work together on localized things such as translations and advocacy and things like that. But the problem
the
with them,
the advocacy bit's the really important bit in many ways. They're kind of like the local arms of Ubuntu, really, aren't they?
Well, that's it. And the thing is, I think a lot of people look at them as just a team that can do translations, which which is it's
the translation team. A lot of people think
the
loco team.
Okay, sorry.
You know, so. I mean, there's a lot of these teams, and a lot of them are very enthusiastic, and some teams work well than others. Like, for example, the Australian team are renowned for being a very good team. And obviously
they do a lot of translation as well.
G'day.
Firefox has blocked this pop-up. Do you want to let it go, Cobber?
And rotations and reflections as well, presumably.
But the I mean, the idea is that... one thing I'd like to do is to have these loco teams working well together, because they're like very much like individual little islands that don't really talk to each other so much. So there's that. I mean, there's loads of different things that I'm going to be sort of looking at. And it's interesting. I mean, I interviewed a lot for it. There's a lot of people applying for the job, and I was gobsmacked when I got it, you know, so I was really pleased.
Yeah, congratulations, mate.
Congratulations to both of you for getting involved.
Definitely.
Yeah. Hey, what have you done for Ubuntu this week?
I don't run Ubuntu.
Apart from on your
You're not allowed to be part of Lug Radio anymore.
Something that's
anyone want a job?
More applicable, perhaps, to open source in general. Two things that I find are very interesting about the Ubuntu community. One is the code of conduct, which basically to be an Ubuntu. Well,
by the way, what have you done for Ubuntu?
Not a lot.
I've
got some code in Yelp. Some desktop.
Keeps pulling that one out of the fucking jar, doesn't he?
That old chestnut.
But sorry, Matt. Yeah, the code of conduct is basically. Something that maybe some other distributions and projects could do with, which is basically that you agree not to be a twat, basically.
Yep.
And to be an Ubuntu member, you sign up to this, and, you know, being an Ubuntu member doesn't give you all that much, except for an Ubuntu.com email address, but... it's like a status. It's like, yeah, I'm proud to I've achieved this, because you have to work to get it.
Prove your commitment. It proves you, because if you want to be a member, you've got to go to the community council, and they will vote whether they're going to accept you as a member. They look at your prior experience and what you've done, and you know, if you get through that community council, then it shows that you're worthy enough to be an Ubuntu member, and everybody's very open to it. And the point
sounds a bit exclusive, to be honest.
No, it's not at all.
It affirms a seal of quality in many ways. You know, they make sure that they get.
Hang on. Either it's exclusive and affirms a seal of quality, or it's not, and the approval process is a rubber stamp procedure. There's nothing wrong with it being exclusive. If it's exclusively for people who are good.
Well,
you said exclusive, you didn't say elitist.
No, you're just clutching at straws now. The point is that...
Yeah, we're clutching at straws.
You know, it's not... It doesn't restrict people. What it does is it means anybody can join the project.
So I take it you two are a part of it, right?
Eh?
You two are...
On the council?
Yeah. Members.
No. We're members, but we're not on the council.
Right, okay.
No, you've got people like, I think it's Mako, Camion, Mark Shuttleworth, and Matt Zimmerman.
Elmo.
I think the point I was trying to make is just that A said it sounds quite exclusive, and you both immediately went, no, it isn't.
Oh, no.
Like exclusivity is bad.
All right, in the way that you said it, but there was a definite kind of tone in what he said.
There was an insinuation of
elitism. It was elitism
rather than
exclusivity.
I mean, yeah, it depends on how you interpret the word. But,
yeah, okay.
But the point you, Matt, made earlier on about Canonical employees, I mean, obviously, this is my first week there, and... I've really discovered exactly what Matt was talking about, is the fact that Canonical employees are people who are paid to work on Ubuntu. They don't essentially control Ubuntu. Mm. It's as community-based as you'd expect. And, for example, last night I sat up until 1:30 in the morning in the community council, being nominated for an Ubuntu member. Just because I work for Canonical doesn't mean that I automatically become a member.
Yeah.
I've got to go through the right community process. And
did you pass?
Yeah. Ah, and but I was judged.
No,
but
very fucking funny if you hadn't.
Yeah. That would have been embarrassing. But it is the code of conduct and the structure is good. It's balanced. It's not too bureaucratic.
So if I say Canonical more, will I become a member?
No. If you did something like help document the way that you could use VoIP more effectively on Ubuntu.
Right.
Then that shows some kind of commitment and shows that, you know, I mean, being an Ubuntu member, it's just a mutual recognition of your peers, really, and that's why it's important.
The way I always
So what did you do?
Perceived it. You know how on forums...
about marketing a bit.
You know how on forums, quite often, you know, you'll sort of log in and it will say guest, and after you've been there for a while, you'll go from being member to sort of long-standing member. It's just this kind of little badge. It doesn't actually mean anything.
But it does mean something.
But does it?
It
definitely does. Because
what could you do as an Ubuntu member that you can't do not as an Ubuntu member?
You get to stay in at playtimes...
I think there's two things. The first thing is
access.
It gives you access to stuff. Yeah, it gives you access to the repositories, so you can put yourself in the fridge, isn't it? On the planet, as an example, which is another example of the community structure. They don't just have one person controlling the planet. You can add yourself to it when you become a member. But the other thing is that it shows that you are essentially vetted. That you've been through the community council. It shows that you're a switched on person who knows what he's talking about. Now, if you didn't have that, there's a certain element with other projects, there's a certain element of those people proving their worth through some other means. And there's no particularly organised way of doing that. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, but...
Which other projects?
For example, most projects, if you want to contribute something, as in if you want to be a part of the development team, you don't have to go in front of a council. You don't have to go in front of a community council.
Well, most other projects are not that big.
No, but
most projects which are that big do have something roughly equivalent.
I don't think it's anything to do.
If you look at Mozilla, for example, if you want to be a super reviewer, the way that works is essentially all the other super reviewers will say, "Yeah, I think you've done enough commits and you've proved yourself enough that you ought to get SR status." They're essentially the equivalent of the community council.
What's important with Ubuntu is that you don't have to be some kind of bug genius or triaging genius. You could be someone like me who just writes to the fridge something.
But
it's the same process for everyone. That's what's important.
It
acknowledges that a distribution, a Linux distribution, needs more than just hackers.
But most other projects aren't doing anything other than hacking. There's no point saying, well, other projects don't have this kind of community because other projects are just made up of hackers.
No, you see, that's completely wrong. Look at Jocosha, for example. Jocosha's got documentation, it's got artists,
but Jocosha's not big enough to have a community council.
But the point is...
The council will be everyone.
No, but the point is it doesn't matter how big a project is.
So who's the community council for Jocosha? It's everybody.
But that's exactly the point I'm making. The point is that if someone comes into the Jocosha community and they start contributing... There's kind of a set of unwritten rules where it gets to a point where we identify that person is essentially a member of the Jocosha development team. With the Ubuntu community, it's a little bit more formalised in the fact that, admittedly, because there's more stuff,
just because there's bigger. It's not a special thing.
No, and I know that it's not particularly a special thing, but I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with it. I think it's a good thing to do.
I agree with you. You were just painting it as being quite a unique approach, and I think part of the reason it's quite a different approach to what most people are doing is because there aren't that many projects like Ubuntu.
I'm not denying. I'm not painting it as a unique approach. I'm just saying that it's a way of identifying where the people are good in being part of that community, and they earn that kind of membership. And then when you talk to that person, they're an Ubuntu member, you can basically think to yourself, they're pretty much switched on because they're a member. Obviously, there's different variations of that. Some people join and they're just amazing. Some people just scrape through. But, you know, that's what I'm talking about.
I'd be interested to know what other open source and free software projects do on a similar level. For example, I know that you get GNOME Foundation membership or something, don't you?
No, the Foundation's not the same
thing. It's different, yeah.
Right, well, you do get GNOME membership anyway.
No,
there's nothing like that, really.
Oh, well, so what's GNOME Foundation membership?
The Foundation is much more kind of...
So like an organisational body.
Yeah, it's more kind of a support organisation.
They have things like
GNOME.
Like they have representatives from Google and Nokia and people like that on, and then they can vote people in the GNOME community in who make... It's very administrative.
Dave Newey's jumping up and down now at the moment going, that's not what the Foundation is, fuck's sake!
it's kind of administrative as to how kind of GNOME works, and I think they decide on where they spend money and things like that. Summer outreach thing, I'd imagine.
Yeah, but they don't say things like, this is what will happen in GNOME 2.18.
Yeah.
For example, whereas the interesting thing about the Ubuntu members is that it's the group that does everything. You know, whereas GNOME Foundation is not like that. There's a load of stuff that GNOME does that GNOME Foundation doesn't touch, the code.
I think that's something that needs to be communicated better with Ubuntu, is that the people who make the decisions about what happens with Ubuntu isn't just Canonical people. Mm. I think there's a misconception that it is.
The council it is.
And and but there, you know, it's people who are involved in that project. And I know that Canonical, you know, want to make sure that people know that it's very much community based, because pretty much every discussion I've had about things that we're going to do with my job, the community has been like top priority.
Always, every step of the way.
And it's been more so than I expected. I expected it a lot, but it's a lot more than I expected. It's like, you know, it's good stuff, so.
Tonight we've got Stephen from Hull Lug. And up in Hull, they've done some. They've done something new. They've created a special interest group to specifically deal with advocacy. And it's called Hull Floss. Tell us about that, mate.
Yikes.
Well, basically, the Hull Lug is very...
apathetic.
Informal in the way it works. It's very much social meets in the pub, that sort of thing.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
The best
yeah,
way.
That, yeah. So
it would be beneficial for the community as a whole if we took more action. To ease the responsibility on the Lug as a whole, a special interest group was formed to enable us to take sponsorship, run events, and do it all under the Hull Lug name, but without the responsibility on the Lug.
And in terms of going out there and advocating to people, which is an act that I and all of the rest of the guys applaud, what are your plans? What are you actually managing to do? You know, who are you targeting?
Well, who we're targeting? We're starting at the moment. I mean, we've done info points before, which obviously targets your computer users and stuff, and there's not been a whole lot of feedback from them that it's getting anywhere. So we're trying to target things that are more sort of general public, Joe public, who uses the computer for maybe the internet and a bit of word processing that doesn't need to fork out for Windows.
Yeah. Mm.
Cool. I mean, the special interest group, the people in it, did you actually set it up as a deliberately separate thing to keep it separate from the Lug, or is it just kind of the group of people who are interested in doing this advocacy?
Well, no, it's actually part of the Lug, but to enable the Lug itself doesn't have a committee or a treasurer or any financial status like that, and obviously to get stands at events and the things, we need cash. So to keep it as part of the Lug, we just formed a committee underneath it so we can elect a chairman and a treasurer and a secretary, so we've got some level of official authority in there.
Yeah. All right, cool. I mean, you know, Lugs differ quite dramatically in terms of how much... official status and official bureaucracy they tend to put together. Some of them, I mean, Wolves Lug is an example, our Lug. Everyone just sort of meets up, has a beer, eats a curry, goes home again.
Moans about it.
Pisses and moans about the location we're in, and that's it. whereas other Lugs are all very, very kind of formal, and they've got a treasurer and a chairman, and they re-elect them every year, and they sort of have Lug activities and all that kind of thing. So where does Hull Lug fall?
Well, Hull Lug... very social. It's a group of like-minded people having a chat in a pub, which is fine. That's what the whole Lug... It's at the moment, we're not particularly set upon having a room and having talks given and tutorials and that sort of thing.
But okay.
Certain members of the Lug feel that they would be able to help out in the community, so why not push it forward and do a special interest group as part of the Lug?
Cool. Hmm. So what are your big ideas then? What are you going to be doing over the next, say, 6 or 12 months that other Lugs can learn from?
Well, we've got a few things on at the moment. I mean, Radio Humberside, the BBC station, has a segment on a Thursday night about a computer segment, basically.
Okay. Oh, right.
We're
going
to try and get on there and put our point of focus on there. Whole University's Freshers Week coming up, so we're going to try and get a stand there and spread it out within the students and get
That'd
them interested. We're hoping to maybe get a stand at Princess Quay, the big shopping centre in Hull, just before Christmas, you know, when dads are wandering around where all the mums are shopping and they need someone to talk to. We'll be there for someone to talk to, just get a bit of interest out there for Joe Public.
Fantastic. I mean, it sounds like this is the kind of thing, you know, more Lugs and groups should be doing. How have you found... you sound, obviously, you're very motivated yourself to do this. How have you found other people, you know, are excited about going out and advocating? Because it's not something a lot of Lugs tend to do. Have you got a lot of people who are really interested in doing this?
Well, a good proportion of the members of the Lug are actually involved with the committee already. I mean, the plan's only been coming together really since maybe a month before Lug Radio Live. So we've actually gone quite a far way in sort of 3-4 months.
Right,
so
that's awesome.
The ball rolling and hopefully getting on like here and maybe on Radio Humberside, generate a bit more interest. They'll get even more people involved.
Yeah,
even
definitely.
If they're not involved with the special interest group, they'll get involved with the lug side of it. They're quite happy to come to the pub and talk.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, that's cool. So, over the things that you're going to be doing, you'll obviously learn the best ways of doing things, and you'll see the pitfalls and the pratfalls and all that sort of stuff. How are you going to share that with the community then? How do you plan to say, this is what we did, and it worked well for us, maybe you can learn from it?
Well, we've got the web space up already. We're still working on a content management system to put up there, but we're hoping to get a blog on there with an events calendar and that sort of thing. Then we can do write-ups, we can get feedback from people, we'll maybe have a wiki on there so we can get people feeding back directly to Joe Public without having to be censored by us, as it were. So we're hoping to do that through the internet, and then obviously we can use success stories at next events.
Yeah.
Cool.
That sounds really good. And, you know, just to wrap up, just one final comment, really. You guys going out there doing advocacy, it'd be great to see some of your blogs on Planet Advocacy so we can continue to grow the advocacy community. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Just drop us a mail, and, you know, it sounds like you guys are doing a really, really good thing up there. So thanks for coming on the show.
Just mention that there's website. The website at hullfloss.org.uk.
Right, okay.
Because there's not a lot up there, but as we get more, there'll be more putting up there. So if people want to get involved, then go ahead.
I'm sure you're going to kick some ass pretty soon. That's
fantastic.
Good.
Cheers, Sheepy. Ting Taz.
Cheers, Sheepy.
No problem. Thanks.
See you later, man. Bye-bye.
Bye. Cheers.
So we've been up over the summer, and yes, I know I started that sentence with a so. And obviously lots of things have been happening, and one of them is the Google Summer of Code.
Mm.
Now, I don't think I'm alone in being a big fan of Google. I think everyone else really hates them.
No.
What?
No. Because everybody always gives Google a bashing.
No, we're just sick of hearing about them all the time.
Really?
I like Google.
So anyway, much rather talk about Ubuntu.
yeah.
It seems.
Council members. So, yeah, we looked through the Summer of Code projects. And Summer of Code is brilliant. Don't get me wrong. Well done, Google. Fantastic. Mm. But we looked through some of the projects and they're probably, let's just say, they're not the projects we might have chosen.
Yeah, there's some really deserving Linux audio editors got cut out. Ursi got in.
Yes.
I mean, Ursi's got a good
name. So we put our heads together and we've come up with around about a dozen projects that we thought we'd like to see put into next year's Summer of Code.
Yeah.
Or maybe gone into last year's
We've
Summer
got to be completely clear, though, that we don't have any money. So if you're writing an
or any influence.
Yeah, this is not like Radio Summer of Code. This is still Google Summer of Code.
We've got no money, no influence,
and no
interests.
And no kippers.
Oh, well, we've got no kippers. So, Monsieur Bald,
would
you like to kick off?
He kicked.
Something I would really, really like to have an open source version of.
Yeah.
And you know what's coming. It's Vizier.
Yeah.
Now, I know I get a lot of beating for being a bit of a Windows monkey, and I'm really not, but there is nothing. There really is nothing. I know that loads of people are probably jumping up and down and saying, it's dire. Dire is really...
Kibio.
Dire is dire, by the way. It's absolutely fucking atrocious. So I'd like to see...
You think you're the first to come up with that?
No, not at all. Not at all.
They said at work, we need Vizio on all these machines. Are they going to buy some other thing that did flowcharts? Right. I said, you've dire. That's got a Windows port and it's open source. And I got such a fucking beating.
It's absolute
dire is dire.
Even for flowcharts, it's rubbish. But
have you tried Kibio?
Never heard of it.
It's like it was a KDE thing. The company wrote it years ago. Right, I don't know if it's still maintained.
Can you do network diagrams and things like that?
I don't know.
Is the company still going?
So I'd like someone to pour a load of work into either dire or start again from scratch.
Would you like that to be part of OpenOffice?
Whatever.
Don't know.
Does it matter?
Doesn't really matter, no, to be honest.
Does OpenOffice Draw do Visio-y things?
It does, like, flowcharty things like that, but
I did the Jacosha element map thing in it.
Anyway, we're keeping this snappy. So,
yes!
We're going counterclockwise, or...?
Go clockwise.
That way.
Okay. Anti-clockwise. Over to Ginger.
We hate clockwise.
Oh, it's my go, is it? Right, yeah. Okay. The thing I'd like to see above almost everything else is working open source 3D drivers.
Right.
Like Xdog. And everyone's going to say, yeah, the problem is not motivating people, it's documentation of how the chipsets work.
Yes.
And some of that's the case, but I think some of it, speaking to a couple of Zorg people, apparently X.org people call it Zorg.
Really?
Yeah. Good on
them. Are you trendy now?
No, I spent 15 minutes talking to a guy at Guardec, and I thought he was talking about space aliens. I had no idea he was talking about X.org for most of it. But Zorg. But I think some of it, at least, if you got someone and got them to spend all their time just trying to work on, there'd certainly be progress made.
Yeah.
Because you know, reverse engineering stuff is really, really long and boring.
That's what
some
of code's all about. I mean, it's not about completely fixing it. It's just putting a load of work into it.
Exactly. And you've got someone who could devote quite a lot of time to it, whereas the existing Zorg hackers haven't got necessarily a lot of time to spend ages poking device registers and seeing what happens.
So would you say there's a lot of scope left with current drivers, you know, before we start hitting the wall of you haven't got enough docs?
This is one of the things I don't know about. Right, I mean, okay. Possibly some Zorg people are now going to write in and go, we've gone absolutely as far as we can without help from ATI.
That's
NVIDIA.
Exactly the kind of summer code thing that needs...
But I'd love to see
I'm
that.
With you on that one, Chief.
Over to you then, Johnny.
That's okay. Me, is it?
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to see a Glade type application for making multimedia applications with GStreamer. Now, there's GST Editor, which is a... which is similar to that sort of thing, but I'd like to see you be able to make multimedia applications.
Well, so you could just like grab your multi-track audio editor widget and then release it as Jakosha. That sounds quite easy.
Yeah, but you know, it's although I, you know, we've banged on about GStream a lot in the past. It's a great project and great piece of software, but it's very difficult to use. And I'd like to see, you know, Glade makes making GUI so much easier. And I'd like to see that for GStreamer. And GST Editor is a start, but I'd like to see more of that. So
okay, so a load of effort put into that.
Yeah, definitely.
What about Tiny Matthew Ravel?
Well, my first one, and I assume we're doing one and then going around
again.
Oh,
yes. Ooh. That's the way it's going to happen.
My first one is I'd like to see a nice, simple interface to the GIMP that makes it easy for someone who just wants to plug their camera in, maybe remove some red eye, and... you know, just do very simple photo editing stuff.
What sort of photo editing stuff?
Well, whether it's, I don't know, sticking Jimi Hendrix in the background or something.
Actually editing, so not the sort of stuff that F-Spot does.
No, not just
that's kind
up.
Of removing red eye and touch-up and rotation and
but
stuff.
But, I mean, things that, you know, your kid might want to put Father Christmas in the sky or something like that.
Right, yeah.
You know, just to make it much easier to use GIMP for non
I think GIMP's really powerful, but I just think the interface is shit.
Yeah, well, absolutely, that's what I'm saying, essentially. Yeah. But it'd be nice to
so
have,
so working
like
on the interface, really?
No, but I think specifically an interface for novices, so that would make...
So there's a different mode?
Essentially, yeah.
I mean, are you talking about something which plugs into your existing GIMP, or kind of a GIMP fork? So you... I mean, the GIMP's kind of aimed at Photoshop-y people, whether it gets there or not is not the point, but do you want a sort of a Paint Shop Pro?
Doesn't Dreamweaver have, like, different versions of the interface? You can have, like, the easy interface.
Don't know, mate. But right. Don't know. But I mean, PaintShop Pro is essentially a Photoshop wannabe.
Okay.
What I'm talking about is something like I'm sure Adobe came out with like a
photo effects or something.
Something like that. It's so basically if your dad or your little sister or whatever wants to kind of take a photo and just muck about with it or do something that they can think I'm reasonably proud of what I've done there without having to get into fucking Gamma.
It sounds like what you're saying. Obviously, I've got to add the reference. It sounds like basically the same approach that Jakosha's taking to multi-tracking, but for photo editing.
Yeah,
something that does all the main things that you want, and it's
but doesn't
to use,
complicate it.
But doesn't include where you're going to have to go down to the real nitty gritty kind
but,
of stuff.
But the point is that Pixar couldn't use it to touch up their next film. Yeah. But that's not what it's for.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's interesting though. Just before we move on, I mean, a lot of people hammer the GIMP's interface. I'd say the GIMP's interface isn't particularly bad. But it's different, and it's more. I'd say it's more PaintShop Pro than Photoshop, and most people compare it to Photoshop.
I find it very massively difficult to be objective about it because I used to find the GIMP dead confusing, and now I don't.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether that's because they've improved it or just I've got used to its weird idiosyncrasies.
It has got better.
I think they've definitely improved it.
I think so, but I find it really hard to be objective
about
it.
If you put somebody in front of the GIMP and say, right, draw a rectangle, it needs to be blue, right? I guarantee you they wouldn't be able to
put
do it.
Put them in front of Photoshop and they won't be able to do it either.
They would.
No, that's really easy to do in Photoshop.
It's a piece of cake.
I think there's certain things that don't compare, right? And there's certain things that do. And you know, in the GIMP, drawing a rectangle, you'd think would be easy, and it's really difficult. I still don't know how to do it, right?
Exactly.
Part of the point is that...
Stroke it. Yeah. I do, in a late at night, select an area and stroke it.
Yeah. I bet you do. The point is that the GIMP people would say that's not what it's for. It's not for drawing a box and then drawing a triangle on top of it.
Who are they to say what it's for?
They're the developers.
They're the developers. I was going to say
that. Who else gets to fucking look in?
The users.
Like, no, no
perhaps.
Developers.
No,
you can't
no,
decide.
You just go use a different
hang on.
Product.
Just no, because someone wants it to use it as a simple primitive drawing
bullshit.
Thing, then they're not allowed to.
Oh, no, you can't write haiku
anyway,
with OpenOffice.org. You'd have to go and use AbbeyWord instead, or haiku write.
Oh no, what I want to do is edit multi-track audio. I can't use Microsoft Word for that. Fucking Microsoft
no,
better
no, you're
fix
talking
it.
Shit like
no,
you,
you are talking shit.
Don't,
you
don't
you
know talk it. Bollocks.
I mean, what's he on about? I didn't hear.
It's basically
the GIMP isn't designed to do sort of drawing stuff. It's designed for taking things like photos and moving them about and touching them up and doing that. The reason drawing a rectangle is difficult is because you're not really supposed to draw rectangles in it.
No,
whereas Matt's argument is the users get to say this is what we want the program to do, and the developers better fucking jump to it.
Sorry, that's the way the world works in the rest of the world.
No,
so
it isn't, though. If I go to Microsoft
source.
And go, I want Word to be able to edit audio, they're going to go,
you're just making a stupid comparison just to make yourself sound better.
Anyway.
Why am I?
Because there is absolutely nothing to do with multi-track audio or any kind of audio in bloody Word.
There
isn't. Okay, and the GIMP people say there's nothing to do with drawing in the GIMP. It's to do with editing.
Image manipulation is what it's doing.
You can't compare those two.
Once
you're comparing
again,
one type of drawing and image manipulation with something this and something completely different. So
yeah, no,
the analogy
doesn't
holds
his hands very far apart.
But the one thing I do agree with Ack in this is the fact that it is, at the moment, I'd say it comes across more as something for touching up images. But that doesn't mean that it shouldn't be able to draw stuff easily. You know, if you look at Photoshop, I mean, I haven't used Photoshop for a while, but Photoshop, it was still a pain and difficult to draw stuff in it. It was more easier to, to touch up photos and things like that. But they've made it better for creating imagery in there. I mean, if you compare the GIMP to Inkscape, Inkscape's easy to just start drawing stuff.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
You know, so I can see where he's coming from.
Yeah, but it's difficult to manipulate a bitmap image in Inkscape.
Okay, enough.
And some people are going to want to do that.
Enough, let's move on. Who's next?
I'm next, yeah. Simple one.
Number two.
A bit more code, a lot more code thrown into AIG Alexa. I know that's hardly an altruistic thing.
Now, question. Is this AIG Alexa or is it Compiz?
Compiz, sorry. Right, no, you're quite right.
Hang on, what else do you want Compiz to do?
Well, see, the thing is, I mean, as you know, I've been running it for quite a while and I'm really into it, but it broke recently and obviously I was gutted. But it seems a little bit unstable. I mean, I've got it working again now. It's all good, and there's new stuff coming through. There's Compiz themes, which is brilliant. But I'd just like to see a bit more time, put more code into it, make it more stable. Because I mean, we've got Vista coming out soon that's going to do that kind of stuff. It'd be really good if Linux was doing it really stably. Make it really easy for all operating systems. Just tick a box, and you've got 3D goodness.
Are the stability problems actually in Compiz, or are they in, say, X, or are they in the video card drivers?
It's not that it's unstable. It's just that it's a pain in the ass to get it to work. Until you get it to work, it's a pain in the ass getting it to work. You don't just tick a box.
So are you saying...
Unless you're in Novell.
So what you're SUSE 10.1.
So I was going to say, so what you're basically talking about is making it... just making it switchable on in a
distribution. Make it switch-onable and make it absolutely rock solid. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty solid as
it
is.
No, it'll be switch-onable in the next. I mean, it's planned for Edgy, it's in SUSE.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's going to be in the others.
How will it be... I've never understood this. It's planned for Edgy if you've got an Intel card.
No, it's if you've got... If you've got a card that's supported by AIIG,
supported by OpenGL.
If you've got a card that's supported with the free drivers, it can't be switched on an Edgy because you haven't got the proprietary drivers.
Yeah,
in Edgy.
No. If you've got the free drivers, of course you.
Yeah,
need
that's
free
why
drivers.
I said an Intel card.
Well, no, there's drivers that'll work with with Nvidia and ATI cards.
Really?
Yeah.
On the free drivers.
It's still there.
More
air,
yeah. Still there.
I'm not
it's
sure.
Two different purchases the same thing.
If you say so.
Two conversations.
So, yeah. If you say so, then I believe
that's
it.
That's because it's the Jono and Axio again.
I was under the impression that if you wanted to use an NVIDIA or an ATI card, then you needed to use the proprietary drivers. And certainly when I've looked at the docs, that seems to be the case.
Drivers were.
Okay, well, maybe I'm wrong.
We don't really know.
At least the impressions from Mike Gilwood.
What?
Over to you. Your next
one. Oh, it's my go. I would like to see someone take a distribution. I suspect that distribution would be Ubuntu. because it's what I care about.
Are you a council member?
But for another reason as well. And get rid of all the dot files.
All of the what?
Dot files.
That dot thing that makes them invisible.
No, the idea that you've got loads and loads of little files and none of them are usable and you can't find any of them, and when you can find them, they're all in millions of different formats. I mean, I don't know whether the best way to do this is to store everything in gconf or whether the best way to do it is to just create a directory called library like the Mac has got and put them all in there so you can at least see them. Or the ideal thing, which is that you put the files in there, when you click on them, it actually pops up the preferences window for the application rather than just opening it up in Gedit. But I'd love to see someone do that. The reason I think it should be done in Ubuntu rather than something else is because Ubuntu are prepared to do things like Upstart, Scott Jones Remnant's thing to run the startup scripts. They're prepared to say, well, we're not going to use the stock init.d, sysv init scripts. We're going to do something different. And one of the reasons I like the way the Mac people have done Unix, I think it's Edgy.
It's in Edgy now.
Yeah.
What does it do? Make it start quicker?
I like
it's event-based. Okay. It's event-based startup as opposed to lots of init scripts.
Okay. Yeah, and it makes it easier to push new things into the startup procedure and so on for packages.
They still support the normal init scripts.
Yeah, but I mean, I really like the fact that the app people are prepared to go, we're going to invent launchd and use that instead of just sticking with sysv init stuff. And I'm really glad the Ubuntu people are prepared to step away from things if they think they can do something better. And I think getting rid of dot files, making it so you get a directory called library, you go into it, and when you click on a thing, it pops up the preferences window for that app, but lets you open it up in Gedit if you want to.
It's interesting.
I'd love to see that. And Ubuntu is where I think it might happen.
It's interesting, though, because just going away and inventing your own thing is criticised in lots of scenarios as well. It depends on what it is.
I think we've criticised people for doing exactly that.
Yeah, they're not invented here.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, I agree with you as well. My next one is the GNOME Project Desktop. Which is something I wrote about.
The GNOME Project Desktop.
Yeah.
The GNOME GNOME Desktop.
Yeah. Right. GNOME.
The GNOME Project Desktop is a new project.
Eh?
What? The GNOME Project Desktop is a new thing.
No, well, it's to do with GNOME, isn't it?
Ooh.
Of course it is. It's modified. So you want to see.
You want to see.
Let me explain what it is.
Sorry, I know what
because
it is.
Because some people won't know what it is.
No one, but me knows what it is.
Other people read the article as well.
Oh, you wrote an article about it, didn't you? Yeah. I forgot about that.
I was thinking one day that, you know, when you're working and you're using your computer, you typically work on projects. So, you know, Open Advantage, I'd be working with a particular client on this, and then I might start working on Jacosha or whatever. And when you work, you know, certain things, like game, for example, I'd never switch game on at work because my friends fall into two approximate categories, people who listen to metal and people who are Linux people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really, my family don't really talk on game.
Yeah.
Now, when I'm at work, I don't want access to my metal friends because they're going to distract me and I'm going to talk about an Iron Maiden album for 2 hours. Right? Likewise, sometimes I just want to talk to my metal friends and I don't want to be distracted by Linux. Right?
Okay.
So what I was thinking, what would be good is if you basically shifted your desktop into a project. So you'd select a project from a little drop-down box.
Right.
And then the entire desktop shifts into that way of working. So when you use Evolution, it only shows you mails to do with that project. When you use Game, it only shows you contacts to do with that project. Firefox will only show you bookmarks.
Okay.
And your desktop you might have different desktop widgets with Jackfield, you know, showing you different things to do with your project. You see what I mean? It's kind of like your desktop organically moves to work moves to work that way. And
does it synergize?
I'll point out instead of Firefox, that would be Epiphany because that's the GNOME browser.
No, it would be Firefox.
You'd never get it integrated into GNOME tightly enough to make that happen.
Right, but with GNOME at the moment, you see, where it's interesting is this is completely possible because we've got things like Dbus, we've got Galago, you know, we've got everything in GNOME together talking to each other, so this kind of thing's possible.
What's Galago?
Galago is a presence framework, so you can find out when, for example, in Jacosha we're going to have network instruments so you can record VoIP calls.
Right.
And in Jacosha, 0.3, you'll be able to select a contact from
a list.
You can
test that, by the way.
Hey?
Sorry.
Shut up. You know, you'll be able to select a contact from a list and then it'll initiate that call, but it'll get that contact from your game contact.
See who's online with IM and where they are and.
Yeah, well, it's all very good. It's a like really telepathy. Cool thing. Yeah, telepathy's telepathy's a different thing, but you know, it'll hook. You know, when we do this in Jacosha 0.3, it'll use telepathy, use Galago, and things like that. But all of these bits and pieces are in place. So this is possible with GNOME, and I really believe it will make the desktop just
that'll take a couple
different.
Of, a
doesn't
couple of summer of codes,
GNOME 3.0 kind of aims to do some of that sort of thing?
Well, I posted on the on the 3.0. ideas page that I really think this is the way we should be doing 3.0. I mean, I can't push it that way because I'm not a C developer, so I can't write code to make that happen.
Yeah.
But I really, really think that it would be a unique edge on the desktop, and it would make, like I say, game is completely useless to me when I'm at work. But it's a great medium for talking to people.
Yeah, I mean, the key point about it is that it's one tiny applet, which is a drop-down list of all your projects and an add new project.
I mean,
then you have to get code in every other application to talk to.
Is it just game the thing? I mean, should you just fix IM, really, and just have, you know, a mode you can put yourself in game, work mode.
But that's the thing. If you, what you'd need to do is you need to put yourself in that mode in each application you use.
Right.
So you'd need to do it in Evolution, you'd need to do it
but
in,
surely
in
work
game.
Email and home email are different accounts, so...
No, not necessarily.
Really?
And even with work email, you'll have different projects within your work.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, totally.
So it's...
Folders.
You could do,
but then when a mail comes in, you've got to context switch away from the thing you're thinking about, the project you're on, in order to think, this other mail, do I need to file it? Do I need to reply to it now?
Yeah.
You could achieve this in each application, but you'd have to switch everything on.
That's a good idea, definitely. Yeah.
So that's why I'd like to have a similar code.
Last but not least.
Well, now this may have already been done, but I don't know about it, because I don't faff about with servers too much, but... One thing is that sometimes at work I'll have a little look at the IIS config tools, and it appears
there isn't one for Apache.
Right, so I was going to say it'd be nice to have something similar for Apache.
That would be awesome, actually. For two
reasons. One, it would take away one of the excuses that some Windows people have for not trying Linux.
I mean, you could say
server.
Webmin, but I know what you mean. Mm. Yeah.
No, Webmin is a way of getting at your text configuration files over the web. It's
it's a little more than that,
the IIS management console.
And the second thing is, although there is a lot to be said for understanding things properly, there's also a lot to be said for just clicking a couple of buttons and doing it more quickly, as long as you have that understanding.
I absolutely understand your reasoning.
Yeah. It's very
my
good
problem with it is that being a relatively experienced IIS administrator and a relatively experienced Apache administrator, I find it really, really difficult to do the stuff I can do with Apache in IIS.
Right.
Because it doesn't really map very well onto a GUI. I'm sure it could map well onto a GUI. Yeah. I'm just not sure the IIS GUI is the way to do it.
This wouldn't take away from being able to do things by text file.
No, absolutely not. It was just, I'd love to say it's just difficult to think about things in that way.
I just punched myself in the nuts.
Thanks for sharing.
I did that the other day. Not punched you in the nuts.
So, Google, if you'd like to appoint us as the committee that decides where your money goes next year, we're here for you.
Yeah.
Boycott committees, that's what I say.
Thing is as well is that, obviously, we haven't got any money, but if people listen to these ideas and think they're cool, go ahead and write them and let us know.
If people want to send us a dowry of some kind, or some money... Then we will distribute it as we see fit.
Maybe it could be, I don't know.
Some kind of protection from me.
Shadowcat Systems, Summer of Code or something.
Keeping with tradition. It's the end of the show, so let's kick off some emails.
Yes.
We haven't had that many over the summer.
No.
Which is fine, because we've all been busy. Anyway, I'll start off. Subject. Chinny raccoon. Which is quite a good subject from
Michael.
Can you
just do that once more, please?
Chinny raccoon.
Look at the way he purses his lips.
Dogs are going to be like tilting their heads as they do that.
Or putting their paws on their ears. please find enclosed the chinny raccoon, so place the one at chin.lugradio.org. He's a raccoon, he's chinny, and he has his arms spread wide in the universal gesture of, I swear it was this big, or I swear I sat just this far from Bill Gates on the plane, or whatever your chinniness is, would please.
Chininess.
Sincerely yours, Michael Causton from Ontario, Canada.
Canada.
Yep, which is not part of the US of A, by the way.
And you know what? Hasn't he got a PS in there about the file size?
Oh, yeah. PS, sorry, it's not a PNG, but my dog ate the conversion software.
Yeah, and you know what he sent us?
GIMP.
You know what he sent us? A TIFF. It's massive.
I thought TIFFs had been banned under an international treaty.
They should have been. It's like,
just use the GIMP, man.
It's like 40 megabytes or something for this picture.
What was he doing? Like sending a fax?
It's like the Gentoo approach to file formats, isn't it? We'll just send it over bit by bit. We don't care how big it is.
So, TIFF. I thought TIFFs have fucked off like 10 years ago.
Alive and well.
All the print industry.
I'm going to read this out. This is a genuine email we've received, which I find slightly creepy, but there you go.
It isn't at all.
Some bloke called Haim Reutgrund.
Yeah, that sounds real.
Yeah. But he sent us two mails.
Is it not Dr. Haim Reutgrund?
And.
Needs to see a doctor.
And one of them says, have we talked about Ion, the tab desktop?
No.
No, which we might do.
Which we haven't done. But apparently there's no shortage of desktops, but the concept is original and it appeals to me. Not a clutter of windows, but tabbing and keyboard rather than mouse input. I think S. Ward from the Hashtag Radio IRC channel uses it.
Right.
Which instinctively puts me off the idea of using it myself.
he's a fake metaller, that bloke.
Is he?
He looks like a metaller, doesn't listen to metal at all. No, he should be abolished.
He's shorter than me.
It's more
that... try and keep focused in this segment.
I seem to find that if he likes me software, I'm going to hate it, and vice versa. Pretty much.
I think our listeners are thinking the same thing.
He says, we all love Firefox and scoff, i.e. one reason being tabbing. I've got no idea about this Ion thing, but go for it.
No idea.
If you like. Anyone use Ion, heard of Ion?
It's worth looking at.
No, we'll check it out, though.
Okay, and the other email he sent is that he finds me to be funny, knowledgeable, and clever, and handsome, and kind, and I take a jibe very coolly. So, thank you very much. That's extremely nice of you.
We've got to redress the balance now.
He does say, is it too early for you guys to know whether Lug Radio Live will take place next summer?
Of course
it
will.
It will definitely take place next summer. And is it too early to know whether it's in the UK or the US? No, it isn't too early. It'll be in the UK.
Or it might be both.
I mean, there might be a different Lug Radio Live in the US.
More on that later.
But Lug Radio Live will be... In the UK. But yes, thank you very much, Hey Reutgren, for writing and saying how much you like me. I appreciate these things, even if the other three don't.
Anyway.
Moving on.
Next email subject title is USA Lug Radio Live.
Ooh. Oh, there you go then. He's not the first person to come up with this idea, is he?
This comes from Chris Turdorsky, or Teodorsky, if you want to pronounce it that way. He says, I contacted you a few months back about the possibility of working with you guys and our Lug, which is WP Lug. WordPress Lug, to set up a USA version of Lug Radio Live. You guys read the email out on the air, but I didn't get any real feedback, which isn't surprising, to be honest. We're very serious about putting this together, if you guys would seriously consider making the trip. So let me know if this is something we should entertain. We realise we'd have to cover your travel expenses, so we'd need to look at corporate sponsorship, things like that. Like I said in my previous email, we've been very involved with the Ohio Linux Fest, which is at ohiolinux.org. So planning things on this scale is not something we are unfamiliar with. So what do you think?
Crazy.
Well, what do people think in general? Would you like
Should
to
we
see
do it? Yeah.
Would you like to see us come to... rephrase, sorry. Don't just write in and go, yeah, we'd love to see you come to America. Actually say, and we will turn up.
I think we're all interested in doing it, aren't we?
Yeah, definitely. I think we'd be interested in doing it so long as we know... And, you know, we'd say this to anyone, as long as we know that it's going to have the kind of spirit that Lug Radio Live in the UK has. So it's the same kind of event, but it's in America.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was horrifically formal and very dry, it wouldn't be Lug Radio Live. So we want our American listeners, I was going to say fans there, but I'm not going to say that. We want the American listeners to experience Lug Radio Live, but they can't get to the UK.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, I'd definitely be up for it.
Yeah. Mm. So, that's sponsorship.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, the difference between the UK and the US is that we could say, hey, it's in Wolverhampton and everyone in the UK can basically get to it.
Yeah.
I'm assuming if we do an event in New York, people on the other coast will just go, well, you know, very good, whatever, but we're 4,000 miles
away.
Sounds
like that might be in Ohio, that one.
Where's Ohio?
Sort of in the middle, isn't it?
I don't know.
Don't know.
Total lack of American geography knowledge here in the Lug Radio Studio.
No idea. Let's
American
just
geography.
On.
So, it's kind of a little journey, isn't it? Oh, hi. Oh. Anyway.
that's why they called it that.
Matt's like just a drama department in himself, isn't he? It's like a show on the fringe.
Honestly, Laurence Olivier spinning in his grave at this very moment.
Microsoft open source stuff. Got an email here from John Grant. He says, hi guys!
Hello!
Did you know that MS already distribute GCC and a few other GPL packages as part of their services for Unix packages? I don't think that was mentioned in the programme.
Yes,
obviously
we did know that.
Spoke about it.
And I think we mentioned it.
And he says, so they're making a start at least. Which I don't think is quite... Idea,
we're not really looking necessarily for Microsoft to
rip off stuff.
To say, here's some open source code that the open source community have distributed, have created, and will help distribute it. Well, Microsoft takes some stuff that was previously closed source and make it open source.
Yeah.
Not take stuff that was already open source and nothing to do with them and move it around. I mean, services for Unix is conceivably quite a cool thing.
Yeah.
onwards and upwards.
I find myself reading a rather strangely titled email. Python Development.
Ooh.
Hey.
Justin Fior writes in, "Hi guys, love the show. Started listening towards the end of season 3 and I'm listening to all the back episodes while we're off."
Excellent.
"I was wondering, since you're all Python fans..."
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, we're
yes,
all Python fans.
We all love Python.
"Which, if any, Python IDEs do you all use?" Now, pause. "I'm looking for something that's free, reasonably useful, smart indent, code completion, maybe, etc., etc. Also, if Aid could suggest one for a Mac, that would be helpful also." Well, I think on the last question, I think you know what to say there. So, come on, Python IDEs, do they even exist,
would
by the
like
way?
Would you like to go first, Mr. Langridge?
I don't use IDEs.
Apple say gedit.
I don't particularly like smart indentation, and I don't particularly like code completion either.
I like IDEs, and I use an IDE. I use Eclipse.
You use Eclipse.
Yeah. Now, the reason why I use Eclipse is...
because you enjoy waiting 35 minutes for your fucking text to start up, as bad as emails, it's got graphics.
It's not that I think Eclipse is particularly great, but it's about the best that we've got out there, and it could be so much better. There's promise in the PIDA project, which is intended to create a kind of...
P-I-D-A.
You're already involved in that, aren't you?
Worst open source project ever. Anyway, right? Yeah, there's the PIDA project.
Stop laughing! If you like that particular
If you're involved
project,
in that project...
Are you a PIDA?
you're someone who loves PIDAs. a couple of things. First of all, I always pronounced it PIDA, so this never came up.
Yeah, that helps.
And secondly... Eclipse, for those of you who haven't used it, but are used to IDEs on Windows or whatever, is like a big kind of Visual Studio sort of thing. The idea behind PIDA is that it takes all your existing stuff and just ties it together.
Thank you for making my point. The thing I was going to say, though, is that with Eclipse, you plug stuff in, and you've got the Python support. But it doesn't feel much like an IDE. It feels a little bit clunky, but it is good. It's very, very useful. But we could do with a better IDE.
Matthew, what are you doing with that power drill?
What we want? Mono develop. With Python support. So,
yes.
Put that drill down.
Okay, well, thanks, Justin.
Thank you. Next.
Oh,
him.
Is it me?
It's the Gingman. I've got one very quick one, which is that Anand Kumria has written and said he lives nearby to Wolverhampton, and apparently he says, today I found out there was a Linux conference on Lug Radio Live, and that I missed it, even though I'm nearby. So sorry, you didn't manage to hear about it.
Adam Curry didn't hear about it.
Anand Kumria.
All right.
He says, anyway, thinking to the future, I know DebConf is going to be in Edinburgh next year. Has anyone given any thought to running LOL on the back of DebConf? It might be the weekend before or after or whatever. I suspect, because Guardec, the GNOME conference, is in Birmingham next year for a week, if we were going to run it the weekend before or the weekend after a conference to take advantage of the number of people who are coming to that conference, it would probably be Guardec, because it's only 5 miles down the road from us.
A lot of people have been asking about this, and we haven't made any firm decisions.
We haven't done one way or the other.
And it's not because... we're keeping anything. We actually haven't talked about it yet, have we? I mean, we had like a 5-minute discussion as soon as Birmingham was announced at Guardec between Adak and I. But other than that, we haven't discussed it. So
no. So I mean, we've got nearly a year to worry about that kind of thing. Anyway, there will be a Lug Radio Live next year. It'll be roughly the same time. Whether it's near Guardec or not, don't know.
Okay. Final mail for me, which is from Petter Kins, I think is how it's pronounced. Tips for your great show. Hello, since I found your show a few weeks ago, I've been listening to it every day, and I've got to the beginning of Season 3 now. One thing I think you should talk about, since you're an open-source podcast, is Rockbox. It's an open-source firmware for a handful of different MP3 players and supports a fair amount of devices from Archos, iRiver, iPod, iAudio.
I've never heard of that.
Audio players, what Linux is to computers, in my opinion.
Fantastic.
Open, great expandability, superb sound quality, supports Ogg, Vorbis and FLAC. Some may think the interface is Spartan, and so far the menus are, but the wild playing screen is dead simple to customise, and several great looking themes have been released so far. Keep up the great show. Love the discussions, interviews and British humour.
And I suppose there's any URL in there, is there?
Rockbox.org.
Oh, okay.
He says it makes me want to come to LRL.
J-F-G-I.
He says it makes me want to come to LRL just to have a beer with you guys.
Just fucking Google it.
Alright.
Cheers from Norway.
So yeah, Rockbox is cool.
Can you push that?
I've looked at Rockbox for my iRiver, and the only thing that puts me off is the fact that you've got to flash it
And
yeah. No. Well, you have to.
And I know you have to, but that just scares me. That's the reason why I don't tend to run stuff like that, because you can make a paperweight out of it.
Now, there's... Yeah.
I nearly killed my N770.
I haven't flashed my Archos. Archos PMA 400, which I haven't flashed because the open software isn't quite ready yet. But I did with my Zaurus. The first time you flash something, you think, this is it. You know, this could be the end. But after that, you just get really used to it and flash it with one hand while you're drinking tea with the other and stuff.
I tell you what, though, flashing devices has changed a little bit, I think, because Elliot tried to flash my 770 and follow all the instructions perfectly fine, but some glitch happened and it didn't boot. But then I was told some command you could run to basically do a cold flash, and that actually fixed it. Because from my experience, if you flash something and you screw it up, you basically kill it and it's got to go back to the factory.
No, it's devices have become very much more like computers now, rather than having everything in the flash ROM.
Yeah.
The flash ROM's just got a bootload and the rest of it just loads off the internal hard disk.
Yeah, that's it. So that's another. Well, that's our first showdown.
Yeah, fantastic. It's been good.
Good stuff.
Back in 2 weeks.
Yes, indeed. Send us your emails.
Keep
show at the
sending them in.
Forums.lugradio.org.
Yes, is the other place you want to go. Join up with the things.
Add yourself to the map.
Add yourself to the map.
Lugradio.org/map.
And a big thank you to our great community as ever. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yes, thank you for sticking with us over the summer, those of you who stuck with us.
Yeah, those of you who didn't, you weren't here.
You weren't here, so bugger off. Those of you who are new,
welcome to Lug Radio.
And join the community.
Thank you very much.
Bye. See you in 2 weeks.